The Tale of the Frozen Pussy, Slipper Trip, The Million Dollar Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will hear on Miami Memoirs. Join Florida attorney Louis Ress as he recounts his 6 decades of legal practice in the wilds of South Florida.
The next story is called Slip or Trip, and it's about a series of cases that I had involving people who were falling. So there's a lot of trip and falls, and I'll tell you about some of them. This one in particular happened right here in Hollywood on the beach at the old Hollywood Beach Hotel, which was the Bible College years ago. Let me start off by telling you that floor maintenance is really a true science. And nobody knows about it. It's right. Under the United States federal government rules, the Department of Labor has within it OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, it's known as OSHA, which publishes and enforces extensive rules and regulations for cleaning floors. Just for cleaning floors. Did you know that floors are not perfectly flat? No floors, well, it's obvious, it can't be perfectly flat. And that liquid wax can puddle in a depression ever so slight and form a slippery surface, especially when it's wet. So floors must be scraped and then tested to make certain that the depth of the protective wax cover is not greater than the permitted amount. Did you ever hear of anyone checking the depth of their floor wax? Well, every commercial establishment must have a compliant floor cleaning program with regular daily inspections of the cleaning of the floors and the carpets and the steps and the sidewalks, as well as accurate and complete written records of the inspection. Think about that. Very few people know that. If the coefficient of traction is not within the permitted range, or if there is any other violation of a rule, the owner is liable in damages resulting from a slip and fall. This area of the law creates prime material for slip and fall attorneys because there's usually an insurance coverage, and therefore it's an open avenue for attorney's fees. A good portion of the price of food in a supermarket includes the insurance premiums for slip and fall coverage and supports a family of attorneys on both sides of those cases, both the plaintiffs and the defendants. And you see that, and I'll get into it, every time you go into a supermarket and they're wiping the floor because people drip something and they have frauds, they go into the supermarket, they take a bottle of jam or fruit juice or something, open it up, spill a little on the floor and walk out, and then an hour later, before it's cleaned up, one of their team comes in and performs a slip and fall, and they got a lawsuit. Sometimes it's legitimate, but it's a whole business. And so the supermarkets in particular have to have an entire staff just to make sure that there's nothing on the floor and that it doesn't stay there very long, if there is. Well, Wendy Vendetta, a buxom brunette and a single lady, age 36, from New Jersey, had a bad fall at the Seaside Bar and Grill at the Holiday Hotel in Hollywood, Florida. She tore up her knee and she had to have surgery at Broward General Hospital. The Seashore Bar was an open air, freestanding building. It was very nice with the refreshing breezes coming over from the ocean, right next to the boardwalk, the pedestrian boardwalk, directly on the beach. It was part of the old 10-story Holiday Hotel, which in turn had been the old Bible College, which earlier was the old Hollywood Grand Hotel, going back to the 1930s. She wasn't sure how it had happened, but she noticed a banana on the floor after she fell. Her two girlfriends said the banana was there on her shoe. This is a true story. The insurance company wasn't paying anything, and Wendy came to me for help. Was there really a banana on her shoe? The shoes had been thrown out. The witnesses, her friends, didn't see the actual fall or the banana and surely didn't know how long it had been there, but they said that she suddenly slipped and then they saw the banana afterwards and there was some banana on her sandal. Sandals? I didn't even know she was wearing sandals. They said shoes. Well, what happens is you start to question your own side of the case. Then you find out what the other side does and you feel justified in doing what you have to do. Well, there was no talking to the insurance company adjuster. He told me frankly that they had marked the case for trial. That means they were going to try the case. There would be no settlement. He said that they were loaded. That's another expression that lawyers and insurance adjusters use. We're loaded.
Meaning they're ready to...
They got all kinds of witnesses. They got you doing something, whatever. They caught you. At any rate, we filed a lawsuit, and I took a close look at those OSHA government-required cleaning records. They showed two inspections on the day of the accident. The first occurred at 8 in the morning, and the bar didn't open until 11:30, and the second inspection showed no cleaning or flooring problems at 10 in the evening. Of course, that was after the accident, which happened at 5 in the afternoon, in the late afternoon. There was no record of cleaning up a banana or anything else. The accident report, which the insurance company required, didn't mention a banana and said that Wendy tripped on her own foot. It did, however, show that there was a guest at the bar named Valentino Brandon from New Jersey, but there was no address and he had not been a registered guest at the hotel. There was no statement taken from him, and it appears that Valentino wanted nothing to do with the accident. The two cleaning employees who worked for the bar, and they were obviously prepared by the adjuster who comes in and writes the statement out for them very often and then says, sign here. The bar's three witnesses, its employees, were now working for the same employer, but they were in California. They each testified that they were present at the time of the accident and clearly saw Wendy trip on her own foot and fall down two stairs that were next to the bar. All three saw her trip on her own foot. I just happened to be looking at her feet as she walked down the stairs, and I saw her feet get tangled up. She tripped on the heel of her shoe. It was her right big toe striking the heel of her left foot. It's amazing what they can see and remember.
Sure.
Of course, they had been coached. Insurance adjusters are trained in preparing statements that they want and having the employees sign them in the presence of the boss. And you're not going to say no. When the insurance company presents you with a statement, the boss is standing there. You better sign it. The banana case was developing quite a smell. The case was set for trial. No office to settle. My phone rings. It's a deep, clipped, very professional voice. Hello, sir. My name is Valentino Brandon, and I'm the chief of police here in Long Branch, New Jersey. Your client's uncle, Frank Tester, contacted me about Wendy's case. Yes, I know about the accident. I was sitting at the bar on that day on vacation, and I saw the whole thing. I noticed the banana on the floor before she fell. Yes, I actually saw her step on the skin and go down. Did I see the color of a banana? Yes, it was dark brown and black. It probably was on the ground a long time. Yes, I'll be glad to give a deposition, and I'll be in Florida for this year's vacation. Sign a sworn statement? Of course. No, I'm glad to. Chief Valentino Brandon, the police chief from Long Branch, New Jersey, signed a sworn statement, which this time I prepared, and it was returned, notarized, and accompanied by a covering letter on the City of Long Branch Police Department stationery with the captain's name engraved in the top in raised letters. Case settled. Big bucks. Wendy never told me that her uncle Frank Tester was also a police captain in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Oh.
Rotten bananas. Rotten bananas.
The insurance company found that one out? Or?
Well, I'll tell you more about it. When I sent them the statement from the police captain, they didn't know that we had a relationship with him, that her uncle was also a police captain in New Jersey. And he said, I know that name, and found the guy. And, of course, he was going to help his fellow police captain. Mm. So they never knew that, but they said, well, they've got the witness. And we know our witnesses are lying. And their witness, of course, is a police captain. We're dead. We're pale. So, very interesting. The next one, the courthouse stairs. I represent the courthouse here, the government. Ernesto Gonzalez had been practicing law in Miami for about a year. His client, Rosa Perez, fell on the county courthouse steps and suffered a fractured wrist and a back injury, which resulted in about $15,000 worth of medical bills. She lost 2 months from her work as a real estate sales lady and was unable to cook, clean, and look after her husband and her young daughter. Her mother moved in to help Rosa. Actually, Ernesto Gonzalez couldn't find much to create liability. There were two levels of a large outdoor plaza staircase covering the entire front of the building leading to the entry of the courthouse. And you've seen the picture on the cover of my book.
Oh, is this state county courthouse? Same one.
Yeah.
Okay.
The impressive white granite block structure had been built in 1924, and you'll see that date on there, and had been the tallest and grandest building in the entire South. It was the tallest building south of Atlanta, as a matter of fact. It had tall Doric Greek columns, and the first 11 stairs stopped at a lovely flat marble open area. And then an additional 11 steps led to an open large area, another one, through the columns and then into the door. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. Well, Rosa was wearing her low-heeled black pumps and she was dressed in a dark blue skirt and a white blouse, and she was on her way to file some real estate petition for tax relief. She had a small black leather purse, and her petition was in her right hand, and she was talking to her best friend who was next to her, and she was asking about where the tax office was located. That was her testimony. As she was going up the stairs, she was at the third or fourth step on the second level of the stairs when suddenly she stumbled and went down hard. There was some screaming, her left wrist was dislocated severely, and she couldn't move her fingers. Her back was bruised and painful. A crowd gathered, and the security police helped her up and supported her under her arms and brought her into a small room inside the courthouse and sat her down until an ambulance came. She was crying. Ernesto Gonzalez Esquire was a diligent lawyer. He was no fool, even though he was practicing only a year. He had measured the steps, and he found that the third and fourth step where Rosa had fallen showed a rise up of 11.5 inches, while the other steps had only an 8-inch rise. Mr. Gonzalez argued at trial that all the steps had to be in conformity with one another, and his expert tried quoting the county building code. But of course, he didn't have a copy of the 1924 building code when it was built, and I stopped him cold.
Oh.
You can't use today's building code to apply to a building that was built in 1925. You kind of have the 24 building code. So the case goes on for 5 days. And I keep walking around the courtroom with a 3-foot ruler, which the judge asked me to put away a couple of times. But I kept bringing it out. And Gonzalez didn't raise any objections, so I kept it at my desk and I kept playing with it. And final argument comes, and Ernesto Gonzalez gets up and he stresses the 11.5-inch rise in the stair where the fall supposedly occurred, and how our minds get tricked into thinking that the height of each stair will be the same as the preceding one. And that's why she fell, because she relied on the uniformity of the heights of the stairs. Now it was my turn, and I addressed the jury. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I have been walking up and down the stairs of this courthouse every single day and measuring them, and I take out my ruler. They all differ in height to some degree, because our courthouse was built in 1924, and I sure don't want it torn down. It's beautiful. Thousands of people go up and down those steps regularly without falling. No one objected. I would have objected, but Gonzalez didn't object. The judge is squirming in his chair. I can't say those things, but I did. Out comes the 3-foot ruler, and I lay it up against the platform on which the jury chairs were located. They're sitting up on a platform, and I measure it. The platform is 15 inches high off the ground. I say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you've been going up to your seats on this platform and stepping back down to the courtroom floor at least 5 times a day for 5 days. You have stepped up 15 inches, not 11, and not one of you has tripped or fallen. Why? Why? Because you pay attention to what you're doing. You look and when you make the step up, and you look when you make the step down, and you think about what you're doing. The steps didn't cause this fall. The plaintiff wasn't paying attention to what she was doing. Verdict for the defense.
Ah.
It's a tough business.
Yeah.
And it's show business, trial law. It's not so much law, it's show business. Okay, the Roxy Tumblers. The insurance industry had a research service that cross-indexed things by name. And this case, they would tell you the accident and who was in it and the past history of these people. They supplied you with small index cards which had information about the party claiming injury, including any prior claims, the type and location of the accident, the doctors, the hospitals, the names and addresses of their attorneys, and the injuries claimed. The Bureau gave you the social security numbers of the claimants and the court case name. So this was something you can't get it today. There's all kinds of rules that you can't
privacy.
Get. With privacy and so on. Yeah, but in those days, the insurance companies banded together and supported this company that fed them this information so that their attorneys could defend these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And also their adjusters could get it. And you paid a fee each time you used it, but that fee was used to support the Index Bureau. The plaintiffs, Arthur and Betty Snyder, were seeking damages for significant injuries, including a dislocated shoulder sustained when Betty fell down the stairs at the Doral Beach Hotel. There were 6 witnesses. They claimed that the carpet on the top of the stairs was wrinkled and bunched and not maintained in a safe condition, with no warnings of any type. Betty tripped on the rippled carpet and went down 11 stairs, striking her head, neck, back, and left shoulder and hands. The ambulance came, and again there were 6 independent witnesses. The accident report showed a defective rippled carpet on the top with photographs to support the conclusion of negligent maintenance. The maintenance records, including the report from the night before the accident, didn't reveal any rippling in the carpet and didn't show in the reports any rippling until after the accident. The largest ripple or rise in the carpet was at least 1 inch high, just where the carpet met the top of the stair.
Now, I apologize. Who were you representing in this case?
The Doral Beach Hotel.
Oh, you were representing the hotel. Okay, okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't represent Arthur and Betty Snyder. So, and I'll tell you all about them. After Betty was discharged from the emergency room with a diagnosis of traumatic cerebral concussion, that means brain concussion, with possible complications, a shoulder separation on the left side, low back syndrome, and multiple bruises. And it said, patient prefers to seek her own physician. She went directly to the office of Bernard Berman, D.C., a well-known local chiropractor who advertises heavily on billboards on the interstate. You've seen these things. Auto accident, slip and fall, in pain. Let me be your doctor. Berman and Associates, D.C., chiropractors. Medical accident and pain management specialists. That's what the billboard said. Well, there were no associates. It was just Bernie Berman. Betty was outfitted with a sling, a cane, a Wallace collar, which is a thing around your neck, and a low back brace. And she was being separately treated for injuries to each of these areas 2 times a day, 6 days a week. Boy, the medical bills went wild. The unpaid medical bills passed $50,000 when the lawsuit was brought. And the lawsuit is brought by Brown and Braun. I don't know if you've heard of Brown and Braun. They also advertise by billboard on the interstate. They also raise hefty money for re-election campaigns for many of the sitting judges. And then they try cases in front of those sitting judges. And their billboards read as follows. Injured in an auto accident? Slip, trip and fall? Hurt at work? You need help in collecting for all of your damages, including pain and suffering. We've collected millions for our injured clients. I want to be your lawyer, Bill Braun. Brown and Braun and Associates attorneys with their phone number. You've seen those things.
Oh, sure.
Well, that's
411 pain.
Right. That's what I'm dealing with. 411 pain wound up being owned by chiropractors, and they stopped that. But that's something else. Anyhow, it clearly was one of those build-up cases, the Snyders, and there was little you could do about it. The Doral was insured with Texas Casualty through the small agency. The small agency was, in fact, one of the biggest insurance agencies in the state. There were a basic $5,000 no-fault medical coverage, which had been paid to Dr. Bernie Berman. The claims manager of the Doral, the insurance adjuster, and I called for a conference, and we sat down together. Maybe we should pay the $500,000 demand, or at least make a substantial offer. The Doral Hotel was retro-rated on their insurance, which means that their yearly claim losses after a certain amount were added to their future premiums. So they would have to pay their own losses. They'd have to pay back the insurance company over a period of time. And they couldn't get other insurance unless they agreed to reimburse from those premiums the amount they owed under their retro-rated policy.
What was the reason for, is that because they had claims or was it a way to reduce the premium?
A lot of things. Premiums would be so high that they became self-insured after a basic amount. And the way the self-insurance was collected wasn't cash from them, but over a period of years, their premiums would be higher, which made it income taxable, deductible, as opposed to paying a claim which might not have been deductible.
Got it.
So very interesting what the insurance company did in these cases. At any rate, the Doral Beach Hotel had a lot to lose, and they didn't want to settle. The adjuster wanted to close this file and write off the loss in the current year. It was December. December is the time when lots of cases get settled for internal accounting and tax reasons, and because the claimants want Christmas money. So it's true, they want to get the money for Christmas. I was concerned with the treating doctor and the attorneys. They were both bad actors. The treating doctor, Bernie Berman, who advertised and everybody needed treatment and nobody got cured, everyone had permanent disability, and the attorneys who were these rough guys, and you see them today all over the state advertising for a mesothelioma or something. So there was a slimy edge to the whole thing. Something didn't feel right. The most significant part of the claim, because it was objectively able to be seen and continued to be disabling, was the dislocated shoulder, which never fully healed and was restricting Mrs. Snyder's activities and limiting her employment. Betty Snyder was a skinny, tough-looking, middle-aged lady with a small, sharp, protruding jaw, black dyed hair, a lined, chalk-colored face, and a high-pitched edge to her voice. She complained of headaches, but her attorneys produced no objective brain studies to back up any part of that case. They were only claiming a minimal permanent disability for the back sprain, with no objective evidence of disability to the back. Their main thrust was the dislocated shoulder, which severely limited Betty's activities. We tried surveillance, having her followed by cameras, but Mrs. Snyder was not driving, and she was holding her shoulder and rubbing her back and rubbing her neck and rubbing her head every time our cameras came near. She could spot a camera from a mile away. It was as though she had eyes in the back of her head. She engaged in no strenuous activity and went to the doctor's office regularly. What about the Index Bureau, that company with the cards that they send you? They showed the recent marriage of Mr. and Mrs. Snyder and their addresses and no claims. That's all I got from the Index Bureau. I called the Index Bureau and I said, let's try her maiden name. They said, how could we get a maiden name? I said, look at the marriage certificate, the Snyder's marriage certificate, and it'll tell you her maiden name. Sure enough, there it was. Her maiden name was Beatrice Adrianus. She had an entirely different social security number. She was shown as born in Romania, previously employed by Sells Gray Circus. They used to have a million circuses running all over the country. This was one of these small circuses. And she was an acrobat. And there was a history of 5 prior accidents, 2 of which were tumbles. The first one was down the steps of Radio City Music Hall. And the one only 2 years ago was down the steps of the Roxy Movie Theater in New York. Both were due to rumpled carpet at the top of the step. She was known as the Roxy Tumbler. Well, the elation at the Doral did not last long, because I filed a motion to dismiss the whole thing, and I was in shock too. The judge denies my motion. I said, Your Honor, these plaintiffs are professional, criminal, fraudulent staircase tumblers. They have a history of 2 recent identical claims where they were ultimately convicted of fraud and served 6 months in jail. Undoubtedly, they created the rippled carpet and then tumbled down knowingly and intentionally in order to literally steal money. The judge spoke. He said, Sir, you have not proven anything related to the subject claim. I'm not interested in what they may or may have not done in the past. These facts in this case stand on their own. She fell due to a dangerous condition on your client's premises. She suffered injuries, including a dislocated shoulder. You can attack her medical history, but you have an objective injury to the shoulder. You are speculating as to the accident itself, and I don't buy it. Motion denied. Wow. I couldn't disagree more with that judge, but I was stuck with his ruling, and it's the discretion. He's the trial judge. Back to the drawing board. I wasn't going to let this case get out of control. Let's get her employment records. Sells and Gray, it turns out, went out of business in 1978, but their records were still around, and I found them in a garage in Indiana.
Wow.
There they were. Beatrice was, in addition to being an acrobat, a contortionist known as the Spider Lady in the sideshow. She could put her head between her legs backwards and make her hands look like front legs and move just like a spider. She was loose-jointed. Let's get the medical records from the 5 accidents. Bingo. She had the same dislocated shoulder in each one. We brought her back for another sworn deposition. This time she wasn't so tough. She evidently remembered those 6 months in jail. In return for an agreement not to file criminal charges, she admitted that she could voluntarily dislocate and then replace her shoulder back in its socket, and that's exactly what she had done in our case after intentionally tumbling down the stairs. They withdrew the lawsuit with prejudice. We didn't file criminal charges. The judge seemed very frustrated.
Now, the judge obviously was...
The judge was frustrated.
Well, he was...
He wanted to give it to us good. He looked stupid when he wouldn't throw the case out when he learned that these were flip and fall artists, that they were fraudulent. And he said, well, one thing has nothing to do with the other. The fact that they committed a crime of auto theft in the past doesn't mean that this, when they took your auto this time, they weren't stealing it. You've got to prove your case. So he was bifurcating the cases.
And why do you think that was because of what you said about how these attorneys pay them?
You're a very smart man. You're a very smart man. The judges are not unaware. They are very much aware of their economic pressure if they have to run for re-election. And they're very appreciative of kindnesses that have been granted them by attorneys. Most of the time, judges are a wonderful group, separate from lawyers. They're in their own profession, and they feel strongly about it and ethically proud to be judges. And they are. They're wonderful people. They give up huge income to sacrifice to become judges. Either you're independently wealthy or you've struggled sending your kids to college if you're a judge. My partner made, he was offered a judgeship. He made in 1 month what a judge makes in a year. And one of the federal judges, who is a dear acquaintance of mine and formerly was an associate in our office, told me that after a year or two with him as a clerk, his law clerks went out and made double what he made on the bench to start in their first year in a law firm. And the judges resented. They were grossly underpaid for the talent.
Mm.
You want me to tell you some more stuff about supermarkets and things and the subspecialty?
Yeah.
Because that's an interesting thing. The lawyers make a whole living. One guy just sues Publix. He specializes in suing Publix. When his name comes up, Publix runs. They want to get the case settled. He knows all the tricks and trades and stuff and how they operate, their internal operation and so on. And he makes a living suing them.